I was living 3 days ahead. I was living, you know, a week ahead. What's coming next? What do I have to do? Where do they have to be? And I mean, you know, screeching brakes. That was over.
Yeah.
And I learned very quickly that you can't plan, and you can't, you cannot control. That's another thing. I'm also guilty of trying to, I'm going to make things the way that they should be, you know, and control them. So I think the whole thing that happened was kind of like that day with the right foot in front of the left foot. I learned so fast that we are staying in this day. That's it.
How do you find joy in life's difficult moments? Life is full of challenges, both big and small. Come explore some sticky moments with the women of Reed Memorial and be inspired to find, keep, and share joy in life's journey. On behalf of Reed Memorial, join me, Joy Maple, for our podcast study and helpful resource page to encourage you to find joy in life's sticky moments.
Hi, I'm Joy Maple, and I'm the Director of Christian Education at Reed Memorial Presbyterian Church. And we are so excited to bring you Finding Joy in Life's Sticky Moments, where we talk to the women of Reed Memorial and find out how they find joy in life's sticky moments. And today I have a very special friend with me today, and her name is Michelle Rigsby. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning. Hey, everyone out there. My name is Michelle, and I am a believer of Jesus Christ. I'm a member at Reed Memorial Presbyterian Church. I am a lover of friends and family, a wearer of rose-colored glasses. I will admit that. I'm just a believer in all things good. I am an elementary school teacher, 19 years. I am a wife. I am a mom of three precious kids. Hal is 12. Hal's 12. He's energetic, the kind of energy that if you could bottle it and sell it, you'd make a lot of money. Elizabeth is, she's 10. She's reserved, just an old, gentle soul. And then there's Marion, who's 5, and there aren't enough adjectives. She's just a lot of really wonderful things all mixed in one. I have been blessed beyond measure in my life, and I'm grateful, to be here with you.
Well, we're so glad to have you. It sounds like life is just smooth sailing. Tell us where you're from. What are you from, the Augusta area originally?
From the Augusta area, absolutely. Born here, family has been here for a really, really long time. Just went away to college and then came back home and have been here ever since.
So you're pretty well connected with the Augusta community.
That's right.
With all those kids, gosh, you know, traveling from one activity to another, school stuff. Sounds like things are going pretty well. So, all right, I got to ask you, why the sticky moment? What sticky moment have you had? It sounds like everything's just perfect. The husband, the kids, the house, the career. What's your sticky moment?
Well, my sticky moment began 396 days ago. I counted today because I wanted to know that number.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So a little bit over a year ago, I was diagnosed with stage 4 metastatic lung cancer. And it was the shock of a lifetime.
So that was in the beginning of like the pandemic, right? How did that all transpire?
Right.
How did you get that uncovered?
Yeah. So it was 2020, summer of 2020. I mean, everybody will remember the year 2020, right?
Of course.
So my family will too. And not just for the reason of coronavirus and the pandemic, but I actually have risk factors for breast cancer and some family history. So doctors had recommended that I do an annual MRI in addition to all the things, you know, that we do, mammograms, sonograms. So I decided that I was going to have that done over the summer. My doctor recommended the fall, but, you know, teachers, we do not, you know, after school starts, you don't take off a day
of
work.
Yeah, you got to get it done,
right? Yeah, or you don't do it.
That's
so
right.
I think about that a lot, too. So my doctor was wonderful, and she said, yes, I know how it goes. Do it over the summer. And so in that MRI, for a whole other reason, in the very top frame, they found an abnormal lymph node, just one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they call that an incidental find in the medical world. And somebody told me very early on, an incidental find can be absolutely nothing, and they tend to be, or it can be the hand of God. So
wow.
For me, that's what it was. It was the hand of God, and it was about 21 days of tests and scans and oncology appointments and all kinds of new things that I had, you know, I'd never experienced. And it was exactly 21 days after that screening MRI for something completely different that we got the diagnosis of lung cancer.
Wow. Take us to that day when you heard those words. I mean, you are fit as a fiddle. I mean, you're a walker. You're very active, obviously, because you have all those children. They keep you going.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So when you heard the diagnosis, lung cancer, what were you thinking?
Wow.
I mean, holy cow.
Yeah, just mind blown. I think what I know now that I had no idea about is I actually fit the characteristic for very commonly for lung cancer.
How so? What
yeah.
are you talking about?
Young, which I love that they refer to me as young when I go to the
yeah,
doctor.
Yeah, don't we
so,
all love
yes,
that?
Yes. So young, non-smoker, female. So that is very common in this diagnosis. I had no idea. What do we all think that people are older, they've smoked all their lives.
Exactly.
Not healthy. You know, we think about all those characteristics, and I've learned that that's not the case at all. So definitely shocking was that day. I mean, you know, that there was a lot of shock because, strangely enough, I had it metastasized from my chest area to my hip. And that was the only symptom I had, was that zero symptoms the entire time. But I actually had a pain in my hip that I had been dealing with. But you mentioned the pandemic. And so I thought it was from over-exercising, you know, biking with the kids, walking with the kids. We'd been to the beach and I'd carried this trailer behind my bike with Marion in it. So I just thought that's what it was. And I was actually treated for bursitis, you know, old age injury.
Wow. Wait a minute. Old age.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
you were just classified
but,
as young.
But then, they told me I was young after
okay,
that.
So you're okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a positive thing. But yeah, so that's where they biopsied was my hip once they realized that that was an area of concern. And that is where we got the diagnosis from. So that day, I learned on that day probably my most valuable lesson. You know, I didn't know it, but I realize it now, was just to put your right foot in front of your left foot. So, you know, when any of us face those trials, that's all you have to do is just one foot at a time. And I can remember, we laugh about it now, but Trey, my husband, and I pulled into the parking lot. We already knew what the diagnosis was because she had called us, but we knew nothing except for this is what this is. It's metastatic lung cancer, which that's all you know.
Right.
And so we actually pulled into the parking lot and parked really close that day to the oncologist's office. And he put the car in park and I looked at him and I said, all we have to do is make it into that door. That's all we have to do right now. That was it. And strangely enough, it was a quick appointment because I really only had one question, which was, can I beat this? That was it. I didn't care about anything else at that point. And we came back out of the office and we celebrated just because we made it to the door in the appointment and back. So I think we learned really early on, one foot in front of the other, and just celebrate what you do and what you accomplish. And there's, you know, you become proud of yourself.
Yeah, one moment at a time, you
yes.
get through one thing. Because
yeah.
that's a pretty awesome diagnosis and an awesome kind of feeling, is to sit there and go, okay, where do we go now?
Yeah.
And, you know, and then the next step is to, like, what do we share with our children? And what does this mean?
Right.
So in that appointment, that very first appointment, how did you feel when you left, other than celebrating the fact that we did
yeah.
it?
We yeah,
made it through
we did
the
it.
Toughest moment.
We did it. I, like I said, when we went in that day, I only asked that question. You know, when I go in now, I have five or six questions, and they're so detail specific and medicine and this and that. I've learned what to ask and all these things. And that day, all I cared about was, can I beat this? And my doctor actually that day teared up with me because she wanted to know about the kids. And that's the whole reason I wanted to know, can I beat this? I have these three precious people. And, you know,
what a great reason to live.
That was it. What mm-hmm. a great reason to live. And I think about how far I've come just in the 396 days, because there was a period of time in the beginning where I couldn't mention this part of the journey alongside my children. I couldn't talk about them without getting extremely emotional. And it's just because of, you know, it's all the fear that's tied up in with that with your children. But they're the greatest reason to live.
And the greatest motivator too.
Yeah, yeah.
So okay, so you get this diagnosis, you know, you've survived that really tough meeting. Now, what happens next? I mean, and I got to empathize with you a little bit as being a teacher and a planner. I'm a former teacher as well. And so I like things planned. I like my life in order. And all of a sudden, your world just got woo crazy. And so many things are out of order, out of your control. How did you approach the next steps, and what were the next steps?
You just said a lot when you talked about being a teacher. Forget it. Forget the planning. It's over. It's done. You know,
no lesson plans for
you. That's
anymore.
Right. There are no lesson plans. And I did. I will admit, as we all do, I am 100% guilty of before this diagnosis. I was living 3 days ahead. I was living, you know, a week ahead. What's coming next? What do I have to do? Where do they have to be? And I mean, you know, screeching brakes. That was over.
Yeah.
And I learned very quickly that you can't plan, and you cannot control. That's another thing. I'm also guilty of trying to, I'm going to make things the way that they should be, you know, right. and control them. So I think the whole thing that happened is kind of like that day with the right foot in front of the left foot. I learned so fast that we are staying in this day. That's mm-hmm. it. And that's the whole journey has been a climb. It's really like a full-time job, honestly. Mm-hmm. You know, I stepped out of the classroom because of the diagnosis and all the things that were ahead. Plus, there was the threat of coronavirus in there too. But it was like a full-time job. And there was it is a marathon and not a sprint. You know, I spent so much time on the phone and in the doctor's office and just trying to figure it all out. But I learned then too. We have to live each day. That's it. And that was just such a huge thing for me.
Absolutely. So this is a pretty unusual and rare diagnosis. Even though you fit the criteria, like you said, this is not a typical lung cancer diagnosis, right?
That's right.
Tell us a little bit more specifically about your diagnosis.
Right. So I have non-small cell lung cancer, which people frequently hear of, but I'm ROS1 positive, which that just means that there is a gene fusion that's responsible for all of this, which is just unreal to think about. It's simply just a protein or the gene that we have, and it just a piece of it comes off and attaches to another protein or another gene, and that fusion sends all of these signals out in the body to grow and spread cancer. So this gene fusion only makes up 1-2% of all of the non-small cell lung cancers that have a genetic mutation. So very rare. My doctor had not had anyone with this specific gene mutation. Others, sure, but not this specific one.
So here you are getting this diagnosis in Augusta, Georgia. That's rare. And you're 1-2%. I mean, Michelle, you're special, but golly, I didn't know how special.
That's right.
So what did that do to your journey as far as getting great care and feeling confident in your doctors and resting assured that you are getting the best care possible? So tell us a little bit about those next steps.
We ended up, you know, I have to say this before. This is my plug for our community before I even go into that. If you think that there's better medical care, you know, beyond Augusta, Georgia or beyond our area, there isn't. The people that we need are right here. And it's just that has been an amazing thing to see. And I'm so thankful for all the people that, you know, are in our community and what they know and what they do for their patients. But with that diagnosis and with that ROS1, you know, it made us a little less confident about what was happening. And so we did go and travel out to MD Anderson very early on so that they could look at the scans, they could look at the pathology, because the strange thing is, too, when you said that I'm special, I don't know if this is exactly how I wanted to exhibit how special I am, but I don't have any masses or tumors in my lungs. They're all kind of around. And so that was all a little bit interesting, too, because typically there's a primary mass in your lung. So anyways, we went out to MD Anderson to kind of get just to get a second opinion, really just to kind of feel confident. And they immediately said, absolutely, this pathology is right on. It is lung cancer. And they also discussed the ROS1 and then told us that this is where I learned so much. But that there is targeted therapy, which is an oral medication that you take every day, and that is how these cancers are being treated. So when you test positive for any of these genes, and they're discovering different things every day. In fact, we laugh about this too. You have to laugh, right?
If you don't.
Yes, you have to. But I said to Trey one day, it's a great time to have lung cancer. You know, all excited. Like that was something I was really excited about. But it is. The research is huge. It's just where it's at in the medical field, and that's what people are really diving into. And the progress that's been made, even in my year, is huge because I've gotten to watch it. But then I understand the progress in the last 5 years is huge too. So they recommended that targeted treatment, and then I came home. And actually at that point, we're still kind of reeling and still trying to it takes a while before it even, you know, before you even can process it. I probably am still working on that now. But yeah. I mean, at that point, we came home and it became, I just had to get this drug because they are extremely expensive and hard to find. And so I had to get the drug, and I waited a few weeks and then started it. So that part of the journey became, you know, it started to quiet down, and it was just taking an oral medication day after day and adjusting to life doing that.
So, Michelle, you've gotten a serious diagnosis. You've been out to MD Anderson, and now you've been told, okay, so you have to take this oral med. And it almost normalizes, or it almost seems like it's not a big deal. But how did you share with your children, and how did you approach this with your family? I mean, this is a serious diagnosis. It's not just taking a little medicine every day, you know?
Right, right. So we very early on, as soon as, you know, there was that 21 days of trying to figure out what was going on from that first scan. So they were, I mean, I'm the kind of person who maybe goes to the doctor once a year before that. So they saw what was going on. They saw mom's, you know, busy. She's got all these things going on. And so we tried to tell them enough, but not too much. And so we just kind of gave them little bits of information along the way. But their kids are savvy, and they're smart, and they're intuitive. And both of my older kids asked me at one point in that 21 days, do you have cancer? And you know, I said, I don't know. And I think they learned too, and they were able to see, I didn't know what it was. And I was having to walk, and I was having to trust and to be faithful. So, you know, we began a major faith journey as a family. Our faith was tested, and it was everything for us. And so even as early as that was, just walking day after day and not knowing, we were able to teach them and to make them see too, when you don't know, you still trust and you still have hope, but because of those promises that God gives to us. And so they started out, you know, down that path, but we told them that was the way that we chose to deal with it. We're open, and we talk, you know, to each other, and that was really important for me. I wanted them on this journey for me, you know, with me and for me, really.
So getting back to how you you talk to your kids and share with them, I think about you and your personality and what I know about you and how you like everything in order. You're going to plan that thing out. Everything's structured. So all of a sudden, your world is unstructured, and that's probably hard for you to embrace, and it's probably not normal for them, because they're used to mom going, okay, we're going to go here, and this is going to happen then, and then we're going to do this, and you're going to do that. And so all of a sudden, the world is a little different. And how did you approach that, and how did your children kind of balance back? And segueing another question would be, what happened to your teaching career?
You have to remind me
of all these questions
as we go.
Exactly, because there's so many.
I feel like so many times I can see several situations where we sat down and we talked. And I feel like in those conversations, though, that I ended up talking to myself as much as I was reassuring and talking to them. But so many times we had, and this just, I just told them over and over, we're a team. We are a family, and we're here for each other. And I had to make them see that what Hal might need is going to be completely different than what mom might need, or dad, or Marion, or Elizabeth. And we're a team, and we have to love each other, and we have to be accepting of the way that we're going to handle things, because, you know, it was just, we were feeling all these feelings, all of us at the same time, that none of us had really ever felt, especially for them as children. And one day, I had been diagnosed on Thursday. on Sunday, the boys were out of town playing soccer. It was just the girls and I, and we had stayed with my mom and dad. You know, early on, you don't want to be alone. It's just, you know, again, just really simple little, you know, bits and pieces that you bite off, and that's about as much as you can do. And so we stayed with them, but I got emotional because I was just, you know, I was just reeling. That's really the only way I can describe it. You know, in the beginning, it's almost like you feel like you're in a tunnel and you're really having some out of body experience.
Like you're watching your own life.
You really do. Like it's a video game or something, mm-hmm. and everything just feels kind of weird. And I started crying, and I mean, I laugh now because I think these kids. But and then my parents are there, and see, you have to think about how other people in your life. I feel about it, you begin to see this is their child. You know, that hit me one day. I think about my family members, my friends, you know, they don't all feel it the way I feel it. My children don't. And so I cried, mom cried, dad cried. And so I had to sit them all down later that day when everybody got home. And I remember saying, that's when we had that conversation. We're going to do this differently. All of us are going to feel different things, and all of it is okay. And I know it's so weird for you to see your mom sobbing, but I'm okay. And that was, again, that goes back to that just walking in that doctor's office and making it, because I wanted them to see I just cried and I was having a really low point and I'm okay now. You know, mm-hmm. we did that. We got through it, but we just were really open and honest with each other a lot in the beginning because I wanted them to know how whatever you feel like is okay. You know, it's and that's all right.
I think that's so great because kids, you know, they're young and they don't have the support group even that we do as adults. You know, they may have a teacher or another adult in their life other than a parent that could be a good sounding board. But, you know, their day-to-day life is with other, you know, 12-year-olds and other mm-hmm. 5-year-olds. Yeah. And how do you say, well, my mom has cancer. Mm-hmm. And what does that look like? You know, I'm scared.
Yeah. And I had to learn, too, as a mom, that I had to pay attention to, and they look like they're okay a lot of the time and they're not. And then I would realize something just by something they said or something they did. And so I had to stay on top of that to the point where I finally said, I'm going to set a reminder in my phone. And once a week or once a month, we're going to sit down and make sure it's okay, you know, how we're feeling and get it out. Sure. And they wanted to know different things, which was interesting. I learned more about them, which I'm so thankful. You know, how's our stats guy? And so he really would ask me about lung cancer statistics, which nobody wants to talk about those. And I'm not, you know, I'm not that big of a believer in them because I just don't, it's not as black and white as that, you know? Right. And so he would ask me and it split my heart wide open, but he wanted to know, are you going to die? You know, uh-huh. that was it, period. I mean, that was just what he wanted to know. And he likes to be prepared. And then I had Marion, who was kind of, you know, she was so young at the time, I mean, still is, but, you know, wise beyond her years. But she was kind of the positive one. Well, we'll go and then the cancer will be gone. And then, you know, she was the one that was trying to kind of understand it, but be the positive one. And then Elizabeth was just there, you know, she was just there. And that,
taking it all in.
I think I said earlier, that goes back to that old soul. She took care of me. She really did. And I hope one day that she sees that. She may already know it. But at the age of 10 years old, she was somebody who was taking care of me. And they just all needed different things. And so we just had to be aware of that, but also check in a lot because they're tough. Yeah. They're really tough.
Well, it sounds like one of the blessings from this sticky moment that you've endured is that your family and you have gotten to know one another in a way that you couldn't have if this moment didn't happen and if you hadn't gone through this. So that is really neat to see because, you know, often we go through stuff and we're like, this is terrible and da, 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 da. And to be able to see that as you're in this journey, because you're still in it. So let's fast forward a little bit. So you come home, you're on this oral treatment. Tell me a little bit about your career as a teacher and how that all transpired. And I know that your school did something really cool too. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I think when you're talking about our, each of us growing in faith together and as a family, I say all the time, and I know you hear me say this a lot, and talk about all the beautiful things that have happened. And sometimes I feel like people think that I'm a little bit crazy when I start talking about how beautiful this is, but yeah. It is. And unfortunately, sometimes I think the sticky moments are the ones that make us see those most beautiful things, you know, so clearly, just so clearly. But one of those things for all of us as a family unit, and even my whole family and even my friends, has just been people and seeing the work of God's people and how he uses his people just to make the biggest difference in the sticky moments and not too. And so it's just been, I love that my children have seen that, because my prayer for them is that they have felt it and they have seen it and that they pass it forward. That's all we ever want to do, right? When groups of people and people do such good for us, we want to pass that along. So, so many different groups, but my school family, they, since I stepped out of the classroom, which was, you know, that was so hard for me,
I bet. After 19 years.
And that's just, you know, that was part of who I was. And I'm slowly learning that, yes, that was a big part of my life, but it is not who I am, you know, but that's still in progress. I'm not there yet. Uh-huh. Just because I loved being in the classroom, I felt like that was where I served my purpose. That was where I was able to share God's love. That was where I was able to make a difference, and I could see it happening. And people are so wonderful and try to tell me now, you're still making a difference. You're still making a difference, but it's just, it feels different. And that's what I was used to. So I fought it pretty hard in the beginning. And at every turn, I kept thinking, oh, I'll go back next week or I'll go back next month, which I laugh about that all the time, because there were so many reasons that wasn't going to happen. But they immediately, you know, every day that I drove through the car line, which was a really hard place for me for a while, because I dropped the kids off at school as soon as the day after diagnosis day, but then had to drive away. So that, you know, I cried for so many days as I pulled back out of the parking lot. But what happened, and the way they just turned it into the most beautiful thing, is I would drive in the parking lot, and every day they would be out there with some sort of basket, you know, a basket filled with goodies, a basket filled with just all my favorite things. And so it became a joke. They'd put it in the passenger seat. But on my birthday, which was just a month after diagnosis, I drove into the parking lot, and they deemed my birthday as Root for Rigsby Day. And they had created shirts that were these Mighty Michelle shirts, you know, kind of like a superhero.
Yeah.
And
you are Mighty.
Yeah. Yeah. So they had these shirts that were fabulous and sold them. And so families and students at River Ridge, and another just touching thing was, and beyond River Ridge, there were a lot of other schools in the county where people sent me pictures that day of them wearing their shirts. So
that gives me goosebumps.
It was an amazing fundraiser. And so the kids could pay, you know, $1 to dress like a superhero for Miss Rigsby. And that was Root for Rigsby. So when I pulled in that day, there were just red, blue, yellow, you know, the classic superhero colors everywhere. It gives me chills now.
Yes.
There was a whole group of my grade level and kind of my hall and some other folks out in the car line. There were about 20 people cheering and yelling and pom-poms. And, you know, they had a big Choose Joy. I'm sure we'll talk about that. Yeah. But they had this big Choose Joy poster. And it was just, you know, just seeing that happen is just, that's why I say that there are so many beautiful things. And then, the bracelets, the rainbow bracelets.
Yeah, so tell us about how that started.
That's just, I mean, that's people too. And the way God's people, you know, what they do for us to help us in a sticky moment. But my best friends and I thought, we've got to have like a battle cry, or you've got to have something.
Well, okay, before you get to the battle cry, because I know where this one's going a little bit. Tell us, you know, the journey in the sticky moment sounds so wonderful right now.
Yeah.
But was there a moment when it was really dark for you, or when you were like, I just don't know?
Yeah.
And was that moment after that, you know, was that the catalyst that brought out this battle cry? And what was the battle cry?
So I think, gosh, this I have to rewind for sure here.
Oh, there's just so much.
So much. There's so much. And, you know, so this medicine that I take makes my short-term memory bad. So you have to remind
me. I'm here to remind you,
Michelle. Sometimes you have to remind me what we're talking about and if I trail off on something else. But if I rewind, I have to here because this kind of ties in with the rainbows and with the joy and just the positivity of it all. Mm-hmm. The day that I had my PET scan, which, you know, PET scan, that was the first day that we were able, you know, the rest of these tests were just, oh, there, we keep seeing something, we keep seeing something. But, and I just kept trusting, this is all going to go away. You know, right. At the end of this, it'll be great.
This dream is going to, yeah, I'm going to wake up from
it. And this will have been a sticky moment, and I will have been faithful, and that, it's okay. But that day was the day that we were able to see for sure that there was something wrong, and that it was cancer. We just didn't know what kind. And so my parents were there, and I just remember saying from the very beginning, you know, through lots of tears, I want this to mean something, that this has to mean something. This has to mean something for other people. This has to mean something for me. I just want it to make a difference. And, you know, it's people like you that make me say that. And I mean that. I thought of you. And, you know, I've got some other friends who lost a child just like you. And I look at people like all of you, and I think if they can stay faithful in what they have done, I can do this, and I want it to make a difference. And I watch you, and I watch my other friends, and they're the ones who've suffered unimaginable tragedy, but they're making a difference in the lives of other people. So obviously, you know, mine was nothing like that, but it was just, I kept thinking, if they can do it, I can do it. And that is so powerful to be able to watch people around us and what they do. So
you're killing me. You're killing me. I'm going to tear up. My nose is running. This is not what this podcast is supposed to be about.
Yeah,
but no. That moment when you're like, this has got to mean something.
Yes, yes. So I think you had asked about dark moments.
Yes.
So there were dark moments. I mean, the day that I told you that I sat outside, you know, and cried with my parents, I realized you take things in such a simplistic way when you're living like that day to day, that you don't think about everything. You're just like, it's tunnel vision. I just have to do this, which is beautiful in a way, but yet it's a different way of living. But I realized that day that mom and dad and I lost it, that I'd had all these scans and I'd had this PET scan and I knew there was cancer in my hip. I knew there was cancer in my chest, but this ROS1 positive lung cancer is extremely aggressive and it goes to the brain very often. And all of a sudden, just out of nowhere, I realized I've not had a brain MRI yet. And I was scheduled to do that next week. And so just debilitating fear, because for some reason I watch many people battle, you know, all kinds of cancers. We all do. But there's something about thinking this could be in my brain as well. I'm so fortunate and thankful that it has never gone there. And, right. It had not at that point. But that was a low point. That was just scary. And you know, I would become kind of debilitated with fear here and there. And again, I would get over it. I would get through it. And that was always so important, you know, to see. That gave me confidence. You did that. You know, you had a really low point and you came right back out of it. But I definitely had days like that where I think the biggest in the beginning and now, I think those dark moments come when for some reason I let myself think, oh, I could die from this. And I have to remind myself, you know, none of us know when our time is. And so that helps me to reel it back in and to remain faithful because we don't know. And this is the day that the Lord has made. It's today. And that's all that we need to be worried about. So all of that getting ahead, you know, I had to remind myself, and I think I said this before, but that was the greatest piece of advice I ever got, was to stay in the moment and stay in the present. Because everything else is too scary ahead. But that goes for anybody, really, if you really think about it.
Right. So yeah. So you realized at this moment that you wanted this to mean something,
right,
that you couldn't stay in these dark moments, that you needed to live for the positive and live each day as it came. So where did this battle cry, and what is this battle cry that you have?
Yeah. So you definitely realize that. And I said it, I owned it, that I'm a wearer of rose-colored glasses, but you know, I think that's the way to be, right?
Right. Because, I'm in agreement.
Because too many times we worry about things that haven't happened yet or that might not happen. And so on this journey, that is no exception, because every little bump that I've hit, if I try to go too far, it doesn't even turn out that way. And that wasn't even the right thing to worry about.
So, right. And we're told not to worry about.
What a wasted time. So I can still see where we were standing. My friends and I were in my driveway and we were trying to figure out, you know, in this day of social media and hashtags and all this, you know, we knew that I was going to want to put my story out there, Caring Bridge, all these other ways. And so what's a good hashtag? What's it going to be? And I had fallen in love with this bracelet. So one of my best friends, her daughter was making them. And I mean, it's not just a simple, you know, this is nothing that we made back when we were.
I know. I was just going to say, wait, I think I made a few of those, but maybe not as glamorous
as
that one.
Ours were just little braided, but these things are serious. But I fell in love with this one and I wore it the day of my PET scan. And then I said, this may be my bracelet. Which I think my friends cringe when I say that to this day, because we started talking about rainbows and the word joy and choosing joy, which I know that we'll talk about choosing joy, because we'll get to that later probably, because I don't feel like it's a choice necessarily. But we talked about all these things and looking for the rainbow after the storm, and there are going to be storms. That's the thing. I don't think any of this positivity is to say, oh, everything's perfect, it's all great.
Right.
There are going to be storms, but it's what comes after it, you know, that's important. So we came up with Choose Joy, and then what better of something to go with it that would be a rainbow bracelet. So they, back to the hands of God, they just tore into this major bracelet making, frenzy. It's unbelievable. And I think there were 300 almost. There's almost 300 that were made. And it wasn't just these girls that were making them, because they weren't able to keep up with it. So it became, I have pictures of husbands making them.
Wow.
Of children making them. Yeah. I mean, it's just unreal. You know, everybody's got their clipboard and they're hurried up after dinner trying to get half of one done. And so people were trying to go into Hobby Lobbies, you know, all throughout the Southeast.
So is that why Hobby Lobby was out of rainbow?
They did not have rainbow thread. That's right. This pack was gone. But, you know, and it's touching to think about what they did. But the greatest thing ever is when I see somebody with one on, you know. And there were so many people, too, who bought them that I don't necessarily even know that well.
Right.
And that touches your heart. And, and it just makes you, I just think about it all the time. But I also look down at it. And it's a reminder for me every day, you know, about staying in this moment and about the rainbows being, you know, there after the storm, but about the way that people love, you know. I mean, we all know that there's bad stuff in the news right now. You know, if we just watch that, you stop believing that that people are good. But, you know, I'm here to say, you know, they are. And then it became the making of the bracelets, people that were buying and supporting and wearing the bracelets. Then people, I started getting mail rainbows. I mean, rainbow coffee mugs. I have on my rainbow earrings.
I know, I was going to point out. If you
can see them under my fancy headphones.
Yes, that's right.
We're so fancy. But having rainbow dish towels, you name it, you know, it's come. And what a beautiful reminder of life and the charge to live every single day. So that whole Choose Joy, I mean, I've got bracelets that say that too. Just all of it has just been a huge thing for us. And it's been amazing to watch what people do and how they have embraced this whole rainbow thing too. It's just how people come together. I don't think there's anything like it.
Well, I do think it's a way that God has used your story to show that, you know, he is faithful and during these difficult times that, you know, he's going to be there to get you through that storm so that you can see the rainbow on the other side. And that's really powerful. So how did your family respond to all this positive outpouring of love and support? Like, were they just like, Wow. And I'm sure the kids were like, this is crazy. Oh.
The kids loved it. And even a group of people, I mean, for so long, there was just stuff just showing up at the house.
They were like, is this Christmas every day?
Yeah. And then I had to remind them, remember, you know, we had to kind of get focused again on what it was about and that we were then charged to do this for other people. That's what's important. You know, that in the life, we accept it. That's hard for people, you know? Mm-hmm. I had friends who told me in the beginning, it's hard to accept things like that, you know, because we live in a world where we want to do for other people. And so I did have to accept it, but then I had to remind the kids, this is not just Christmas for you every single day.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, I think things come at the perfect moment. So when I would have some of those dark moments, or I'd be overwhelmed because I'd been on the phone all day trying to get everything sent over to MD Anderson, or even into this past summer where we hit a major roadblock and it was a challenging time, that things would just show up. You know, there'd be a sweatshirt and that would come in the mail that would have a rainbow on it. Things happen at the right time, and that's when
the Holy Spirit at work.
Oh,
for you,
I mean,
girl.
When and that's you think about the strengthening of faith. You know, I thought I had faith beforehand, you know, and I thought that I knew it all when it came to that beforehand, or I thought I had a good handle on it. But having to lean and put everything, you know, in your faith and your relationship with God is, you know, when that's it, that's all that mattered to me, and that's all that was there, is really, really eye-opening, you know. And that verse that says that, you know, the testing of our faith produces perseverance. It does.
Yes.
It's, you know, when you can see it, you can feel it. It's unbelievable. There was a quote somewhere, which, you know, I'm all into all these quotes and nuggets and
little nuggets of goodness.
Little nuggets. I love it. I have so many screenshots on my phone, but that many times the emptiness, you know, in times of emptiness, that's often where we see the fullness of Christ. And
absolutely.
Amen to that, because that is what we have seen. And it's perfect.
So, all right. So we've gotten into the journey. Seems to be going along. You've gotten some treatment. You've gotten some love and support. And so you're like, okay, I think I can handle this journey. And then, tell us about that skin mark.
That's right. Well, luckily this whole Ross One, you know, it's not like I can talk to a friend who possibly is battling this.
Right.
I don't, you know, there's maybe three of us in Georgia or something like that, you know, that are in a group that I'm in. So I found what's called the Ross Wonders. And so go check it out, RossOneCancer.com.
They sound like superheroes.
Yeah.
Just
well,
like,
yes.
See?
Mighty right. Michelle is in the Ross Wonders.
But, there you go.
It's been a wonderful thing for me, because you need to feel like you're with some people, you know, on this journey. Mm-hmm. And so found them, and I found out early on through our Facebook. We have a closed Facebook group, too, where we can just ask each other questions. There are some people that can take these oral therapies, like I was telling you about. They're called TKIs. Mm-hmm. And really, they don't cure you of cancer. And I knew that from the beginning, that this was never going to go away, that I was always going to have it. But the dream is that these drugs can inhibit it for a really long period of time. So some people get it all cleared up and it's inhibited, can't see it on a scan, and then they can live like that. I mean, the research is ongoing now, but I mean, there are people in my group who say, I've been on this drug for 5 years, wow, or I've been on this drug for 7 years. And I mean, they're inhibiting the cancer for that long, which is,
that's
my dream. You know, they are my heroes. That's who I want to be. So, and it's just a scientific, I've become kind of a scientist, maybe a little bit of a doctor too, but before these targeted therapies, and before they were testing for these gene mutations that I was telling you about, which ROS1 is one, the average lifespan was 7 months for people who have what I have. And so the science is just huge. So I got out there and I thought, these are my heroes. I want to be on a medicine. I've been on this for 5 years and holding. I've been on this for 7 years and holding. And so when I had my first scan after I started the therapy, it looked like I could possibly get
you
there.
Were going to be one of those.
I was
going to
be
Ross
one.
Wonders.
It cleaned up most of it. There's a little bit left to go, but I thought, this is going to be me. And I made it 6 months without progression. I was hopeful I would be one of those people, but there again, it became a time of, okay, you're not. So what are we going to do? And that's, you know, so that happened in the spring, and it was just a whole host of, we went from the progression, we found that out, to the medicine is so toxic, really, that it was affecting my heart. You know, I always say it's good, bad medicine, you know.
Yeah.
It's so bad that it gets all the bad stuff, but then it hurts the good stuff too. So my heart, then I ended up having a re-biopsy, had pretty major surgery to have the re-biopsy, and just went through all these different things, started on a completely different treatment path, had 10 days of Gamma Knife to some areas that they wanted to get. I had two cycles of chemo, was kind of just all the while staying on this, what I call my magic orange pill. But they didn't want to completely take me off of that because it was working. When you get off of one of these medicines, they don't put you back on. So then you've kind of burned a bridge.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. You want to have a lot of different things, you know, in the cabinet.
Exactly.
Yeah, one at a time. So anyways, the summer, spring and summer were just, it was just like a wild roller coaster, you know, and that's when I said it's like a full-time job. It was just constant, and the treatment probably wasn't even the biggest thing for me. It was just managing all and making decisions and, you know, trying to do all of those things. And so, you know, we started down this new treatment path, but then kind of had a break in some things. And I recently had a scan back in August, and you can't see any cancer in my body right now.
You are a Ross Wonder.
Yes, that's right. I am a Ross Wonder. So, you know, that was a wow. I mean, I kind of felt like I was floating for a little while. So they call it no evidence of disease. It's inhibited enough where you can't see anything right now. So
that's awesome.
And so now I'm back to the orange pills, you know, but that was a, that was a really good experience. Of course, that was just exciting for us. And we celebrated.
Yeah.
We had cookie cake. We, you know, did all these things for the kids. We wanted to pick them up from school and tell them all.
Yeah.
Because they need to be able to celebrate in these things with
us. Absolutely.
You know? And when I say I celebrated, it doesn't mean that I don't, that I think it's gone and I'm done. You know, I know that. I know that this is forever. My husband says that all the time. We knew that. They told us from the very beginning with this metastatic disease that, you know, we're not going to cure it at this point.
Right.
You know, all we can do is stop it from growing. But Hal that day, stat guy, back to it.
Yeah, back to stat Hal.
You know, we were being all positive and having our cookie cake, and he said, oh, but Mom, when is it going to come back? What about when it comes back in a month? And I said, it might. It actually might come back in a month, but today we're celebrating, and today we're going to be happy about this day, and we're going to celebrate this. That doesn't mean, you know, we know that. That doesn't mean that we're completely naive to that, but I wanted him to see, yeah, there are probably scary things ahead. I mean, quite likely, and for everybody, there
but
are sticky moments ahead.
God has given us
ahead.
This day this to enjoy,
day.
To
and
rejoice.
If we've learned anything in the year, it's that we've got this day, and we're going to rejoice in this day. And I told him too. I said, then you can't have any cookie cake if you're not going to be positive.
Yeah, you better be positive.
We are positive people. We got rainbows around here.
That's right.
But yeah, so it is, you know, the journey has just, it's had so many different parts and seasons and times and ups and downs and all arounds, but you just keep walking.
Yeah, you're a great testament to that. Golly. So we're in a great season right
now. That's right.
Let's enjoy it. But
yeah.
Just what have you learned about yourself in this sticky moment season and these ups and these downs, and how has your faith been enhanced or changed or altered in some way during this journey?
I have learned so much. And you know, as a teacher, you know, you're always up for learning all throughout life and in your career and all, but I have never been taught what I've been taught in the last year. I mean, never. I never would have imagined that either. And I can't believe that we can learn so much at this age.
Don't you think it's a little bit of what we used to say in teacher world, hands-on learning?
Hands-on learning. This is hands-on learning. It really has been. But some of the biggest things that I am not in control, and I don't have to always have a plan. And of course, there are certain things in life that we have to plan for and be ready for. I don't mean that. I don't just live in this world where you know everything is. You know, I don't do any of that planning or have any of that stress. But I was living in a place where I was putting, you know, I was under a lot of stress, but now I see how much of that was coming from me, you know?
And the way you approach life.
That's right. And I've learned things don't have to be perfect, you know, and they're not going to be. Yeah. And things, we're not in control. Right. We don't have to have that plan. But the biggest thing that I've learned, and I think we all think this, I really promise you that I thought that I was living in the moment and I was living for the day. But I wasn't. I really wasn't. So being able to do that, and it is hard work. Staying in the present is actually work. You have to work at it. It's not like I just can do this.
Right.
I was thrown into something that did force me to do it. But even now, as I, you know, kind of grow into a different season, I do have to work at it. But my faith, you know, you asked that question of how has it changed my faith? It was, you know, beforehand, and maybe we all do this, I had become what I call a complacent Christian, you know? Mm-hmm. I got up in the morning and I did my devotional because that's what I said I was going to do. And it was almost like checking a box. That's what
I did. Instead of living it and being real and active.
Yes. And then now that I have been completely reliant and dependent and leaned on those promises and believed them truly and felt them, you know, just the belief that we just need to be still and he'll fight for us.
Exactly.
Yeah. The belief that, you know,
he's in control.
Yeah, he's in control. So all of that has changed my faith immensely to where that complacent Christian understands that I need this and I want this. You know, I want that relationship. I want that time with God. And if I hold fast to those promises that he gives us, then nothing else matters. There isn't anything else that matters.
Well, it's been a great time spending some time with you, hearing your story. I just have one more question. What is one piece of advice that you would give somebody going through a sticky moment, whether it's a diagnosis or some other challenge? What would you say is your takeaway that you want someone to go, I got that from Michelle?
I can only pick one?
Yes, only one, Michelle. We've only got so long.
Only one. A piece of advice, right? I mean, well, I have to say, so this is going to be two, really. Okay.
All right.
Can I do two?
Yeah.
Only because we've talked about this so much. I mean, I think the biggest thing that if I had to put everything else away, all these wonderful tips and tricks and things that work, because there's so many things, you know.
Right.
Diet, exercise,
all
friends, family, all of the wonderful things, but it is our faith. And so cling to that. Believe it, trust it, hope in it. That's it. That's what it comes down to for sure. But I have to add on, if I'm talking like a little piece of advice, do this. It is that kind of what I was saying earlier about that right foot, left foot. You don't have to do more than today. Just today. I read something that had that on it, and I thought, what a great little saying, just today. We can do so much more than we think we can, and if we can just bite off a little thing and walk, and then celebrate it when you're done. You know, I did that. I just did that. And, you know, thank the people who helped you do it and lean on the people, you know, who came to help you. But I really think just knowing that all we have to do is today, or all we have to do is that one teeny tiny moment. And when it's over and we do it, we got to celebrate it a little bit too.
So what I've learned from you today is that we just need to choose joy just today, and then it's going to keep going. Well, I'm so glad for our time together. For those of you listening and watching, I want to encourage you to join us February the 5th, 2022 for Read on the Run. This is our 10th annual Read on the Run, and we raise money for local charities or missions, and we do this year in honor of my friend Michelle Rigsby. Yay! So we are going to run in honor of Michelle, but it's going to benefit the University Healthcare Foundation, and I sure hope that you will join us for a great day of family fun run, walk it, you know, roller skate if you need to, do whatever. Come out and choose joy just one day at a time, putting your right foot in front of your left. Thank you so much, and I hope that you find joy in life's sticky moments. Join us every second and fourth Wednesday of the month on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, and our website, readchurchaugusta.org.